my gosh, how fun was that? Let's give it up for this band. My word. Man, something's got to give. You got to give a little more. I love it when a plan comes together. Man, I tell you what. One of the things, by the way, my name's Kurt. It's great to meet you this weekend if we haven't met before. One of the things that Jesus' followers consistently were disturbed by with him was he always had these incredible expectations. He always expected way more of them than they felt like they had the capacity for. And so many times we see them kind of floundering. It's almost funny at times. I mean, you know, they kind of sometimes just flat out fail. And Jesus knew he had this very short time frame to develop them. I mean, he had a very short kind of runway to get them to where he needed them so he could hand the whole enterprise off to them. And because of this, he often pushed his disciples, his apostles, to just, you know, push beyond what they felt like they were capable of. And they find themselves flailing and floundering at times, just flat out failing. Sometimes just like, we give up. We don't know what to do. And maybe they should have seen this coming because, I mean, even when you think about how Jesus kind of called his 12 disciples, I mean, they were out fishing, a number of them, one day, and he said to Peter, James, and John, hey, I want you to put your fishing nets down. I want you to come follow me. And he said, you know, you're done fishing for fish. I want you to come, and he used this really weird phrase, I want you to fish for men. And what was even more weird than the phrase was that they had just spent the whole night fishing, and they were fishermen, and they didn't catch a thing. And they're like, Jesus, you want us to catch men? We don't even know what that means, but like, we're fishermen, and we were pretty much came up with zeros overnight. Like, we I don't know that we can do this. And he said, don't worry about it, just follow me. And then there were other moments where they would be out at sea, and these were men of the sea. And he would tell them to go out in a boat, and he'd push them off and say, hey, I'm going to meet you on the other side of the lake. And they'd begin to make their way across the lake, and then they'd get stuck out there. They couldn't actually oar their way across the lake. They'd get, you know, kind of buffeted by the wind and the waves. And then at the very end, and we're going to come back to this later, you know, Jesus kind of gets the whole team together and he vision casts and he says, truly I tell you, you're going to do the same things that I do, and actually you're even going to do greater things. And they'd see Jesus do all these amazing things. And they're like, Jesus, that is not possible. It's just not possible. I mean, we can't even row 6 miles across the southern end of the Sea of Galilee. I mean, we're in the sea and we get stuck. We can't even do that. How are we going to do greater things than you? But again, he knew he had a very short time frame with which he was able to develop them and kind of set them up for what he was calling them to do. And so he'd constantly put them in these situations, these almost artificial environments, if you will, where it would push them and stretch them, and they would even feel inadequate at times, but he's trying to teach them a lesson. And they weren't just lessons for these guys. Honestly, as I read these, they're lessons for me as well. In fact, I'll share a bit more on that in a moment. But really, they're for all of us, for any of us who are trying to say, okay, what does it mean to be a follower of Jesus? Or maybe you're exploring, okay, how do I understand what it means to follow Jesus? Or how do I get better at this? There's lessons in here for us. In fact, one of the best examples is a story that many of us have probably heard. In fact, if you grew up in church, you heard this. Even if you didn't grow up in church or weren't around church, you probably heard this story. It was one afternoon where Jesus, he was teaching all day long. And wouldn't you like to know what he taught about all day long? I mean, that's kind of interesting in and of itself, right? Because usually Jesus taught in like little short snippets, but this was like an all-day teaching, and it was like an all-day seminar. I'm sure they had like 15-minute coffee breaks at times, you know, just to give everybody a break. But, you know, he's teaching all day, and it's like if somebody would have just written down what he said, nobody read it down. Nobody wrote it down and like recorded it. And maybe that was the point. Maybe if we would have known what he said, we'd be like, whoa, if he taught on it all day, it must be really important, but we would have missed the point of what he was actually demonstrating throughout this experience that day. And so there were thousands of people across the hillside that day, men, women, and children. The sun's starting to go down. I mean, there's no food trucks, no facilities in the area. Jesus, his disciples come to him, and they're kind of wore out. They've been sitting out in the sun as well, and they're like, Jesus, they're hungry. But they didn't really want to like be like, hey, Jesus, we're hungry. Can you let us go? So they didn't want to like wimp out on him. So they're like, you know, Jesus, we need to let everybody go. We need to like send them out into the villages and give them a dinner break. And so let's do that. And Jesus looks at the crowd and then he looks back at his team and he says, they don't need to go away. You go give them something to eat. Which I'm sure they thought, there he goes again. Expecting us to do something we're not capable of. Which we'll come back to again in a moment. So, if you've been tracking along in this series, we're in week 2 of the series Faith Fuel. Does that get old for you? No, because it doesn't for me either. I mean, I can't wait for May. But you know, we're talking about how do we fuel our faith when we're running on empty? And the question we've been asking is, what would my life look like? What would I do? You know, how would I respond to him, to her, to the people in my life? What are the things I would initiate in my life? What are the things I would maybe avoid if I woke up every day absolutely sure and confident that God was actually with me? Like, how would my life look different? And, you know, and we know people like this. You know people like this. Some of you are people like this. People that, regardless of what happens in your life, like, you just have this unshakable faith. It doesn't matter what comes your way. You just stay in the game all the time. Now, last week, we looked at the first of five kind of tools or dynamics. We're giving you five tools or dynamics that are present in anyone that has a growing faith. And so last week, we looked at this thing called practical teaching. And the reason it's called practical teaching is because somewhere along the way, and people who have developed a faith, in their story, you will hear them say, you know, I maybe grew up in church, or I didn't grow up in church, or I grew up Catholic or in a church where they said things, I didn't understand any of it. But there came a point where I went to this one church, or I got involved in this Bible study, or this campus ministry, or this student ministry, and all of a sudden, things just made sense. They explained things in ways that just made sense. They gave me practical applications. They gave me handles that I could grab onto and actually apply to my life. And my faith got bigger as a result of that. Because somebody told me, somebody showed me what it looked like and how to live out my faith. And it changed everything. And we get emotional about this at times if you've experienced this. Because, you know, you've maybe felt that internal nudge where you're like, okay, I know I'm supposed to apologize. That's what it means to follow Jesus in this moment. I don't want to do it. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to follow you, Jesus, even though I don't get it. Or maybe you got nudged to write a letter to somebody, or you got nudged to volunteer, nudged to be generous with your finances, or, you know, and you didn't have the time, you didn't have the money, you didn't have the emotional bandwidth, but you didn't even know how things were going to turn out, but Jesus nudged you, and you're like, all right, I'm going to follow you. And you did it anyway. And on the back end of that experience, even though you didn't know how it was going to turn out, God's faithfulness intersected with your activated faith in that moment when you just said, okay, I'm going to do it. And something remarkable happened. And you grew. And you're never going to forget those moments because there was something very practical and application-oriented that actually helped you be better and experience a whole different side of life. Now, the second thing, the thing we're going to dig into tonight, and this is kind of in the same vein, this is what we're calling a personal ministry. What it means to have a personal ministry, understanding that my life is way bigger than just to serve me. And that I actually have a call on my life. When I begin to become a follower of Jesus or pursue Jesus, he wants to use my life to benefit others. And here's why this is so important. Because again, when you talk to somebody who's got an activated growing faith, you're going to hear somewhere in their story things like, you know, there was this moment where I, you know, for the very first time stepped out of my comfort zone and I served somebody. And when I did that, I didn't feel prepared in that moment. I didn't feel like I was adequate, but I just felt nudged and felt like this is what I was supposed to do. In essence, they were stepping into someone else's story. They were serving a neighbor. They were maybe starting a nonprofit, maybe doing something in the community. Maybe they were stepping into leading a junior high small group or a senior high small group, an elementary small group, getting down on the floor with kids. Maybe they were, you know, just doing something that they felt nudged to do. And they're like, I don't even know how this is going to go. But man, if I had somebody like this in my life would just look drastically different. And when they tell their story, they say things like, man, I found real quick I was in over my head. I was handed this lesson with this group, a small group of junior high boys, and I don't even know the Bible that well, but I just felt inadequate and I felt unqualified, but I knew, and this is a part of their story, I just knew. I didn't know how everything was going to go. I didn't really feel like I had the bandwidth for it. I just knew that I needed to do this, even though I wanted to back out of it. But I went ahead and did it anyway. And the reason that's a part of their story isn't because they did anything miraculous or, you know, that they were so great in that moment. It's just that when we push through our inadequacy, on the other side of that, you know what we experience? We experience God's faithfulness. In fact, I had a chance to talk to one of our volunteers this week about his experience on this. And so I want you to hear a bit of Ken's story here. Take a look. So Ken, thanks for joining us this weekend. You know, you've been a part of CSM now for 2 years, serving as a small group leader. Why did you become a part of CSM and the team there?
I became a part of CSM because of my past. As a child, I was in rough situations and I needed that positive outlook. And, you know, I had some, but I had a lot more negative than others. And it was a program called Kaleidoscope that I used to go into, and it was a guy named Robert Nunley that run the program, and ran the program. And I was there for my first, I want to say it was three years in elementary school through middle school, I think. So I started like my fifth grade year, and then I went through some of middle school. And then they had another program, which was called the Joy Program, and it was stood for just older youth. So after you finished with Kaleidoscope, if you wanted to help the kids in Kaleidoscope, you went through that program. So of course I went through that program because I felt the way that changed my life and gave me everything I needed, I wanted to do that for other kids. And so any opportunity like this, I feel like I'm obligated to be there if I can.
You know, Ken, we never know what hangs in the balance. When we have the opportunity to step in and be a part of someone's life, we never know the impact, the trajectory change that's going to create. Do you ever wonder what these kids' lives would look like if you weren't showing up with them each week?
Yes. I wonder that a lot, actually. There's been weeks where work was tough or I had a whole lot going on, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to make it this week. And ironically, it's every time that's happened, I actually had one of the kids reach out to me. And then I was like, God, if I wasn't here, who would they have asked that question to? Who would they ask for help? Who would they vent to? And so for me, it's almost like a necessity. It's a duty. I can't really get out of doing that. Like I'm a big helper to a lot of people as it is, and being able to help children and get them where they want to be, that's the highlight of it.
How have you continued, Ken, to see what you do in serving others, kind of owning this as your ministry? You're here to serve other people, but how has that grown your faith and trust in God?
I think it's more than just like the CSM as far as student ministries, as far as what's grown my faith, because I took a big step back from religion for a while. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, I had a car club that I had started here. And I was for Mopars, we had a lot of people around, and Dave Elkins joined my club. And that's how I found out about Crosspoint. And so I had given up for a while, and I went here, finally came to a service, and unfortunately this was like a year after he initially invited me. So I came in, and just something about the way Crosspoint ran was what really made me say, okay, I need to give this another shot. And so we grew to love the church, grew to love everybody in here, and when it came to ministering with the children, it was almost like a breath of fresh air. It was like something was missing. And then to be able to come in here, and if I'm having a bad day or if I'm not doing as best or if my faith is being tested, these kids would actually help me through that. Just being around them, their positivity, just being able to share a Pepsi with them, talk over a bag of chips, anything. It's been a breath of fresh air, to say the least. And it's helped me quite a bit with my faith, because I feel like I'm closer to God now, and I'm closer in my spirituality. And I can't say that it was not from the kids, because they definitely had a big part to doing that.
All right, well, Ken, I just want to say thank you as one dad to another, because I know my son, who has been impacted by the way you have served here at Crosspoint, he's where he is because of people like you and people who are willing to step in and be that kind of mentor and that kind of person of faith and calling them forward and growing them in their faith as you grow as well. So thank you from our family to yours.
Thank you.
Man, how cool is that? Let's thank Ken, my word. Man, I tell you what, and I am grateful. I mean, my son, he shows up at Crosspoint Student Ministries for one reason, because of Ken, because of people like Ken. And I love how Ken said, he said, you know, I couldn't not do this. I mean, because of the people that have played this role in my life, I couldn't not do this. I know some of us, we hear that, and you're like, man, I want to do that. I want to have that kind of impact. And there's just this kind of inadequacy that takes over. You're like, I want to start something in my neighborhood or something in my kid's school that I just feel like I should be blessing people with, but this inadequacy takes over. And all of a sudden, you begin to resist moving on that. And let me just tell you that if you, even as you're sitting here right now going, oh man, I know I should be doing this, I'm feeling nudged to maybe do something or bless people in some way in our community, and you're resisting that, let me tell you what you are. You know what you are? You are actually normal. That's what you are. You're normal because that's what normal people do. That's what normal people do. And you might be going, okay, but isn't that an indicator of a lack of faith in my life? No, not at all. This is actually a moment that's testing your faith. All right, you're going, I don't know how this is going to work out. I don't know if I have what it takes, but God, if this is you nudging me right here, I'm going to do what I can do, and I'm going to trust that if I step in, that you'll do what only you can do. And see, the other thing is we never know what hangs in the balance of these moments. Right, you have no idea. I mean, just do a quick survey of all the things in our world that have been started by people that if they wouldn't have moved, we wouldn't have. I mean, think about hospitals. There's not a hospital in the United States that wasn't started by a Jesus follower. I mean, hospitals where Jesus followers said, hey, we need to care for people. We need to create an institution to care for people, even in Indianapolis here. What are the names of most of our hospitals? Methodist Hospital, which is now IU Health, St. Vincent Hospital, St. Francis, even community hospitals were modeled after Christians who started hospitals to care for people. I mean, why was Mother Teresa so impactful in Calcutta for so many years? It's because she had the audacity to say, man, the poor, they actually matter, and they matter to God, and we need to serve them. Orphanages, think about orphanages. Think about how foster care programs. Where did those origins of those come from? It was Jesus followers. It was Jesus followers saying, hey, we're to care for the orphans. We should do this. Public schools. I mean, public schools actually were started by Jesus followers, not to teach, you know, religious education, but just because, you know, Jesus followers said, hey, God gave us a mind that we should grow. We need to expand the mind of children as they grow up. They're started by Jesus followers. This is how the movement of God goes forward in the world. We don't ever fully know what hangs in the balance. One thing we do know is that the quality and the strength of our faith hangs in the balance. When we say yes, and they're like, God, I don't know how this is going to go. But when we say yes, it's one of the five ways that God fuels your faith. Now, if you don't believe me, let's take a look back at the story that we started a few minutes ago. All right, so Jesus' disciples, they come to Jesus, they're like, Lord, you send the crowds away. You send them away back to the villages. They need some food. And Jesus, they're like, you need to do something. Jesus, you need to figure this out. And it's getting late. The sun's about to set. We need to somehow disperse these people. They're tired. We're hired, tired and hot too, but like we need to get these people out of here. And so the disciples, they ask Jesus to do something. And Jesus, he turns back to them and he in turn asks them to do something. And Jesus invites them to actually be part of the solution to the problem. And again, they're going, this is impossible. Here he goes again. Ask us to do something we're not capable of. There's thousands of people on the hillside. Now, in John's gospel account, this is kind of cool. This story is recorded in all the gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. All the authorized biographers record this story. Some of them were there. Some of them talked to eyewitnesses and got the details that way. John was there. John actually downloaded this moment from Jesus afterwards, and Jesus was like, yeah, I was testing them. I knew they didn't have the capacity. I knew they didn't have the resources to carry out what I asked them to do. I knew they were going to be incapable. But I was trying to continue to put them in places. I have a very short runway to develop them. I'm trying to put them in a place where their inadequacies come to the surface and they have to decide, am I going to do what I can do and trust God to do what he can do? And so he's like, when they came to me and said, hey, you need to send the people away, I just thought, this is a great opportunity right here. And so he looked at them and he said, you give them something to eat. And so Andrew, one of the disciples, he goes and, you know, he pulls out a lunchbox. He said, hey, apparently, you know, one of the kids in the audience, he overheard us talking and he came up and offered us his lunch. And all we have here are two fish and a couple loaves of bread. And if you've not been paying attention, just dial back in for a moment. I love, love, love Jesus' response right here. See, this is how big problems are solved in the world. This is how macro problems, this is how community-wide, church-wide, nationwide, worldwide problems are solved in this thing that Jesus says next. And the invitation's to all of us. He invites every single one of us to be a part of this. He just looks at them, and I think he smiles, and he says, okay, bring it. Bring it here to me. Bring me what you have. And there I stand in that moment watching in on this, and you stand, and some of you have more fish than loaves, and some of us have more loaves than fish because we all have different capacities. But see, every single Jesus follower, every single person is trying to figure out, okay, what does it mean to follow Jesus? What does it mean when Jesus invites me? And perhaps, you know, you're saying, okay, God, I want you to do something big. God, Jesus is like, you know, you're looking to me. You want to see something big happen in the lives of kids and students in our world? You want to see something big happen in our community, in our nation? You've been praying for some kind of change. You've been listening to Sam Cooke. You know, change is going to come. He says, I want you to participate in it. And friends, let me tell you something. This isn't anything you don't know, but we've just gone through one of the most difficult times in our entire life. I'm not saying it's the most difficult time in all of human history, but in your and my lifetime, at least the last 100 years, we're on the hopefully tail end of a season. It's one of the most difficult times. And I know some of us, we want things back to normal and want everything that we used to have, want more opportunities for students and kids. And, you know, Jesus says, hey, just bring me what you got. We want to see more people. We want to see more people engaged. We want to see more people in our groups. For those of you here at game day, wasn't it cool coming into game day and like seeing so many people? I mean, man, it was so cool. I know, like on Sunday, people were looking for seats. They couldn't find seats on Sunday, and people were like, it's so awesome. Well, you know, Jesus is like, just, you want to see more of that? Bring me what you got. Listen, we can bemoan and wish and complain or grumble. You know, I wish things were different. You know, Jesus is like, don't do that. Just bring me what you got. And so there they are standing there, and the sun is starting to go down. And Andrew's like, all right, Jesus, here you go. 2 fish, 5 loaves of bread. This is going to be interesting. And let's be honest, every day probably with Jesus was interesting, right? I mean, I'm guessing every single day had something fascinating in it. And Jesus, he directs the people to sit down on the grass, and he takes the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, And he begins to pray a prayer over them. And it's kind of like Heavenly Father, and he prayed prayers like this before. You know what's about to happen. I know this is going to happen, but these people, I want them to know that you and I are connected. I want them to know that this isn't me. This is actually you doing this right here. And so it says, and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and he broke the loaves. And then, think about this. Then, you know what he did? He gave them all the little pieces to the disciples. And you know what they did? They did the only thing they knew what to do. And they trusted Jesus to fill in the rest. They literally, and I'm using this phrase against my better judgment because I really don't like this phrase at all. I hate the phrase. A lot of people of faith use this phrase and throw it around out of context all the time. But it applies. This is literally what it means right here. They walked by faith in that moment. They walked by faith. They didn't come up with something for God to do. I mean, so many times, like, God, I'm going to come up with something. I need you to see you move on this. Here's a plan I have. And we impose our plans on God. We say, I'm going to walk by faith and see if God comes through. No, that's not walking by faith. Walking by faith is when you feel the nudge to do something, and you don't know how it's going to happen, and yet you step into it anyway. That's what happened right there. They literally walked into the crowd, having no idea how this is going to work out, hoping that they didn't look like fools running out after they got past the first row of people. And if you've heard the story, you know what happens next. It says, then he gave them the food, the fish, the bread, and the disciples. So Jesus didn't pass it out. He gave it to the disciples, and he said, I want you to give it to the people. And so they served the people. They gave the food to the disciples, he did. And then the disciples took it and gave it to the people. And it activated their faith in that moment. And that moment intersected with God's faithfulness. And all of a sudden, something remarkable happened. Because it said they all ate. Every single person in that crowd of over 5,000 men plus women and children ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. Now this is where this gets a little personal for me. But it gets personal for me when I talk about this, especially in this context right here. Because this context, even right here, has come about because of moment after moment and seasons of activated faith. Meaning, 15 years ago, there's a group of people who felt nudged to start a new church. And we wanted it to be a different kind of church. And you know, there are people that told us it couldn't be done. In fact, one of my friends, ironically, from my previous church, he said to me one day, he said, Kurt, I sure hope you're not going to start one of those rock and roll churches because it'll never work. Okay. It's almost like a challenge. Like it gave me a little fuel to prove him wrong. We just want to start a church for people who didn't like church. People that might be inclined to come to something that was different than church. And we had this dream for a new kind of community. And we'd say all the time, we still say, when we didn't have a building, we'd say, you know, we're building something that is yet to be seen. And that's still true. We're saying things that aren't being said, and we're trusting. Here's the cool part. We're trusting that God will do something in and through a whole bunch of imperfect people, myself included. And we still get excited about that. we're trying to uphold any kind of religious, you know, ideals. We just want to be a community that made the community better. In fact, it's a big thing to us still today. But even from day one, we'd say, if people aren't glad we're in the community, I mean, if people in Fishers and surrounding areas aren't going, oh my gosh, if Crosspoint weren't here, our community would be worse off. If they're thinking, man, Crosspoint, they don't really bring any value to our community, then we should take the sign down, shut off the lights, give the building away, and do something else, because we don't need another church. We don't need another place for people to just get together and play church. We feel like we should be here, and the community should be like, oh my gosh, our community's better because of these people, because of the way they live, because of the way they love in the neighborhoods. Wouldn't this be a place where people bring their friends who didn't like church? In fact, I was on a call a couple weekends ago with a friend of mine who was here on game day weekend. And she's been here a couple times previous to that, and she said to me, she said, you know, Kurt, when we went home that day, I said to my husband, you know, for the first time in my entire adult life, I was sitting in church realizing, oh my gosh, I wish I would have had some of my friends here, because it was the first time I wouldn't have been embarrassed to have them in church with me. I'm like, wow. That's always been an ideal of ours. I mean, see, the problem was we couldn't not do it because the strong nudge that God gave us for this kind of environment. And so every time I see a baptism, every time I see somebody walk through the waters of baptism, every time we see a guest return for a second time, I mean, like, oh my gosh, we earned the opportunity for them to return. That means something. Every time I hear a story of students or kids, you know, faith taking a turn and going up and to the right because of something somebody like Ken did, because they invested in them, it's so humbling to me. I'm gonna be honest, I just get overwhelmed. And perhaps many of you came at a time when pre-pandemic Crosspoint was running like a machine, and come in here and kids' environments were always open and coffee was always on and it was wall-to-wall people, and you know, but there was a time, very early where it was nothing more than a lunchbox. It was this big right here. A few fish, a few loaves of bread. And Jesus said, bring it to me. And even as we say here right now, I mean, the pandemic's obviously, you know, kind of dispersed, and it's created a lot of you know, apathy, and we're not necessarily back. I mean, we're still trying to climb back, as our whole community is. We're in a rebuild season, and it's like this moment is again a just bring it to me. Will you bring me what you got? And I know our team is depleted, our staff team feels depleted many times, our community around us is tired and depleted, our families feel tired and depleted. Oh my gosh, I mean, getting the kids out the door to school, it's just so hard these days. As many of you know, getting to work, it takes like time and a half the effort to do the job I did 2 years ago just because of the season and all the things that are so complicated. And it's like Jesus says, okay, just bring me what you got. In fact, I sat down recently and spent a little bit of time reflecting on moments, seasons over the past 15 years where it seemed like all we had was a lunchbox. Or I just sat there and went, God, I don't know how this is going to go. I don't know, Father, I can't see any opening here. Funny thing is, I came up with over 15 over the course of 15 years. But let me tell you what's happened through those moments in my heart over those years. And what's happened in my faith, because we stepped in and went forward, and through blood, sweat, and tears, our faith has continued to grow. And I know you're probably like, Kurt, yeah, you're like a pastor. You got big, amazing faith. No, I don't. I'm a human being just like you. But what happened in our hearts through those moments, in our lives, and we're like, all right, here we go. I'm not sure. Here's what we got, God. This is how communities change. This is how your faith gets bigger. In fact, do you know what the answer, the solution is to every single problem in our world? Any idea? What's the answer, solution to every single problem in our world? Some of you are going, it's Jesus. No, it's not Jesus. It's not. All right. I know that's like what you think the right answer is, and I know for certain people in the room, I could get defrocked by saying that, all right? But it's not Jesus. Jesus is not physically present here. The historical Jesus isn't physically present with us. He is physically present with us through his spirit dwelling inside of us, inside his followers. You and I, we're his hands and feet. Gary Hagen, president of International Justice Mission, I love what he says. He says, you and I are his plan A, and there is no other plan B. See, you're the solution. This is where Jesus said, he said, hey, you're gonna do things I've been doing. In fact, you're gonna do greater things. And they're going, come on, Jesus, seriously. Nobody's gonna teach like you. I tell you what, if I was teaching like Jesus today, this place would be packed out. People would be coming from all over the place. If I could heal like Jesus, oh my gosh. I mean, people would be lining up from across the globe. But see, he wasn't talking individually. Nobody's ever gonna be as great as Jesus individually. But when we come together collectively, guess what? Greater things have happened. Greater things have happened in our world. In fact, I was reading a book over the last week or so. It's really been stimulating for me. It's called The Founder's Mentality. It's a business book, and it talks about how businesses that often start small, but they find their niche in a really unique way that meets needs of people, and how those essential needs that get met, it really begins to make that business grow. And eventually, though, that business gets stuck. And it gets stuck because of bureaucracy and all kinds of stuff, and it's because they lose their founder's mentality. Whereas in the early days, you know, the founder was there and everybody on the team was a founder. And there was just like this insurgent mentality. Kind of like, man, we don't like the way things are and we're here to change things. We don't like the way things are working in our world. We're here to change that. And see, Jesus, he was an insurgent. Jesus was one of those insurgent people. He's like, I don't like the way people are treated, so I'm going to change them. It caused you to call you to love differently. I don't like the way people gather under the name of religion. And it's more about how they gather as opposed to the fact that of how they love in the community. I don't like that there's people that don't have hope. And see, as the problem is, as those entities begin to grow, they have to be scaled, and you know, then there has to be structure and budgets and you know, management plans and management of people and all kinds of systems and bureaucracy, and you got all these people now that are part of the entity, and you lose over time. You lose the insurgency. And everybody begins to assume that everybody else is gonna do it. And somebody else is going to fix that. And well, that's not my role. We operate in silos. And I just think this is one of the reasons that the church, especially throughout the pandemic, the church in America has really kind of presented itself as pretty weak because indifference is set in. Because we've lost the founder's mentality. It's like, it's the church's responsibility. That's our government's responsibility. Our country's responsibility. Who's the country? It's us. Who's the church? It's us. God still wants to say that to us today. See, Jesus still gets excited when people that he empowers get sweaty and dirty and worn out and tired serving people. And the more that we do that, the more we jump into the adventure Jesus calls us to. I'm telling you something, the more your faith gets fueled. Now here's the cool part. We got to finish this story. Cool part of the story. You know what Jesus does after this? So he just sent the disciples out. They collect more bread and fish than they originally gave out. I mean, think about this. They're laughing like, oh my gosh, like how did this happen? It's like Amber. You guys know Amber? Amber Ruffin? Amber, say what? They're like, they're doing that. They're like, say what? Like, how did this happen right here? All right, what just happened? We want to experience more of this right here. And then I love what Jesus says next. The very next word in this story. Is immediately Jesus, and look what he immediately does. He doesn't want it to go to their head. He doesn't want them to feel like, oh my gosh, look at what we did. Immediately Jesus made the disciples get in the boat, and he asked them to go ahead of him to the other side of the lake, and he would meet them there. And once again, they go, and they can't make it 6 miles across the southern tip of the Sea of Galilee because they get stuck in the waves, and these are men of the seas. Once again, he's hoping that they would connect the dots between the lessons that they're learning and the loaves and the journey across the lake. Because he had a compressed time frame to develop them. And he wants them to see, if you'll just bring me what you got, and you'll trust me to do what only I can do. This is the way God works. This is the way the world changes. And then a short time later, imagine this. Jesus is again out on a hillside. This time, he doesn't have thousands of people. I mean, he'd spoke to thousands. These are really his team. This is his core team. This is the group that's going to begin to change things. It's his 12 apostles plus a handful more men, 20 or 30 women. There's probably 50, 60 people standing on a hillside. And Jesus hands off the entire enterprise. And he says to them, hey, I've taught you everything I can teach. Just remember the loaves and the fish. Remember the boats. Remember the experiences where you felt like, man, Jesus, I'm incapable of this. And then he says this, I just want you to go and I want you to make disciples of all nations. And they're like, there he goes again, asking us to do the impossible. Jesus, what do you mean? We can't even hardly work our way out of Jerusalem. What do you mean? You want to say, well, okay, what was he going to, never mind. No, never mind. You just want us to bring what we have and trust that you will do what only you can do. See, you'll never know what hangs in the balance of your faith. When you step out, even when you feel resistance, when you step out and you're like, all right, I'm going to try something. Your faith gets strengthened. Your endurance gets strengthened. All right, perhaps there's a maturity that gets developed, not only in you, but in others. This is what personal ministry does. It positions you to experience God's power in your inadequacy. That's what it does. Father, I'm going to bring you what I have. This is what I got. And in doing so, I'm going to trust you to do what only you can do. And God uses that to fuel your faith, to blow up your faith, and to move the movement of Jesus forward. Now, I want to give you two questions as we kind of wrap up. And these are next steps. We give you applications every single weekend. And you can go ahead and open up your connection card, your app. And I want you to just think through these two questions, and then you can kind of think through, okay, what's my next step this weekend? First question is this. Where is the Spirit nudging you to say yes to bring what you have right here, in this local entity, this local ecclesia known as Crosspoint? Right, where's God nudging you to get involved, to get more involved, to bring what it takes, to bring what you have, to give what you have? All right, I want you to think through that. I want you to ask yourself that question as you think through the next steps that are listed there. And then the second question, where is the Spirit nudging you to say yes in our community, in our nation, in our world? Maybe it's something in your neighborhood. Maybe it's something in your workplace. Maybe it's a dream you have, a training, and you're like, man, I have this, and I feel like this will benefit people. I just don't know what to do. And you get stuck, and you feel overwhelmed and inadequate. Where's God nudging you to bring what you have as a Jesus follower and to benefit people? What does that mean for you? Now, there's a handful of you, and I don't know who you are, but there's probably a few of us that if this question, if you look at the second question, you're not quite sure. You're like, okay, Kurt, I feel called to something, and I don't know what it is. And I'm using the word called very specifically right here, because there are moments God calls us very specifically to things, and you don't know what that is. And perhaps you're kind of an entrepreneur, a pioneer, you're an out-of-the-box person, and you know, you can serve in kids or at the coffee bar or, you know, in the band or whatever, but you're like, I feel like I'm supposed to go do something, create something. If that's you, and you don't know what that is, though, I want you to mark that box on your connection card that says, I'm interested in a pioneering conversation. And we're going to have a round table later next month, and for those who are feeling called, I want to present something to you that might help you identify and begin to equip you to say, okay, what is it God's calling me to? So just mark that. It may only be a handful of us. That's fine. You know who you are if that's you. And if you're still not sure... Okay, what can I bring and how do I engage? Let me point out the obvious. In fact, before I point out the obvious, I was going to tell you a story, but Jim Irsay told this story recently, and it was just kind of fascinating. You probably heard it before, but take a look at this.
Well, this is a story of faith and willingness. So what happened was the big floods came to New Orleans. Danger for everyone. A man's in his house on the first floor. A police car comes by. Says, get in this police car, your life's in danger. And the man said, no, God will save me. I am staying with my house and praying. And the police car reluctantly drove away. The waters rise. Now he's on the second floor. Here comes the Coast Guard in the boat saying, sir, please get in this boat. Everyone's life is threatened. The man said, no, God will save me. I will stay here. The waters rise, the man's on the roof, everything is closing in, the waters are swirling. A helicopter comes down, drops a ladder to the roof and says, grab the ladder, this is your last chance. The man says, no, God will save me, and he dies. And he gets to heaven, and he sees God, and he's awfully anxious to go right up to him. He says, hey, God, why didn't you try to save me? And God said, I sent a police car, a boat, and a helicopter. So the moral of the story goes is we must have willingness and always meet God halfway. Thank you.
Wow. We must have willingness and always meet God halfway. So let me point out the obvious. If you're just like, I don't know, what does that look like for me? Let me give you the obvious. Next weekend, we open 10-30 kids environments. And we talked about this over the last few weeks. We have 23 volunteer spots. And you might be going, I don't know if I do kids. If you can sit on a floor, if you can take a lesson and just read it, if you have a little bit of care in your life, you can do this. And let me tell you something, there's 23 spots. We've had some volunteers that have had to pull out of volunteering because they've just been serving for so long and other reasons. We've had to replace some. We're still at 23, same number as last week. See, this is where the founder's mentality breaks down, because it's like, oh, somebody else will do this. If you're looking for a lifesaver and you're like, okay, where do I go? I want to grow my faith. I want to experience more God in my life. It's finding a place to serve. It might be for the immediate time, starting with St. Al serving kids. Next week, we got most of our roles covered, not all of them. The following week, we have many, many roles open. See, God doesn't call the qualified. He qualifies the willing. And so perhaps that's where you're like, hey, I'll jump in. I'll be a part of that solution. I'll bring what I have. And if that's you, just mark that on your card. We'll get with you. We'll help you find a place this week. And if you're not interested in taking those steps, yeah, I get it. That's totally cool. It's totally your decision. But let me just say, let's not fool ourselves into thinking, well, God's just not working. I don't know where God is. I mean, man, he's sending us nudges, moments all the time. The question is, are we going to meet him in that moment? Are we going to bring what we have? Are we going to trust him to do what only he can do? And then potentially experience the remarkable together, because that's the invitation. That's the invitation he continually invites us into. And I'm going to tell you, when you do that, I can tell you from experience, it will grow your faith. You will grow. So let's stand. I want to pray for us. We're going to sing one more song. Heavenly Father, thank you for inviting us into what you're doing. I mean, your incredible belief in us. I mean, we don't believe in our own capabilities the way you believe in us. And so, God, I just pray that you help us know what to do. Help us to know where you're nudging us, those places where maybe we're to be doing something in the community, serving people in our neighborhood, people around us, making the world around us a better place, using our gifts and what we have, and trusting you're going to fill in the gaps to do something remarkable and meaningful. God, I pray that you help us understand how we can continue to be a part of this entity, Crosspoint, this local ecclesia that's here to bring hope to people. Help people, help kids, help students see you and understand you. Help us to know the role that you want us to play. And if you're nudging us right now, help us to not resist that. We may feel inadequate. Help us to push past that and trust that you will actually do something. And in the midst of that, we know we're going to grow. And so, God, I just pray that you would help us take one step today. And we know that as we do, you meet us in that place. And God, we want to follow you. We want to grow. We want to understand more about what that means. And so just cement that in our hearts. Make that clear to us in these moments. Give us the courage. Take a step as we follow you.